Welcome to our special 10-year anniversary podcast series. I'm Stefan.
And I'm Paul.
And we're your hosts. We started Stories We Don't Tell with our good friend Brian Bennis back in 2014.
And from the beginning, we've been recording all the stories. So for this series, we went back through our archives and picked stories from 10 storytellers, one from each year.
And each episode, we'll chat with one of the tellers and hear a story from them.
On today's episode, we're talking with Misha Bauer.
And today, we're joined by Misha. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This will be a little bit different from our previous because you told a story at what, at time of recording, was our last show.
Right.
By the time this airs, we'll have probably at least one or two shows under our belt for the new season. But given the idea here of the season, of this whole episode arc, season, podcast?
Season.
Season?
Okay. Yes.
The idea for this whole podcast season was sort of to have someone to represent each year. And so you get to represent our 10th year.
Oh.
And so I guess by way of introduction, can you just give us us and our listeners a brief bio of, you know, how you got to storytelling and you know, what do you do in your life?
Yeah, sure. Firstly, I'm hugely honored to be representing your 10th year. My goodness. Well, I'm a writer and musician based in London, Ontario. I guess my main works are a short story collection that I wrote what feels like 1,000 years ago. It was over 10 years ago. And since then, you know, I've continued to be active with writing in the form of, you know, creative essays or live storytelling here and there. And I'm currently working on my debut novel, as I said before, at a glacial but respectable pace. And I'm also a musician. So I was in a band a while ago called Bruce Peninsula, and I released a solo album back in 2019 called Trying to Have It All. And here and there, I, you know, have the honor of doing some vocal guesting and some score work in collaboration with my former bandmate, Neil Haverty. So I stay busy with my arts practice. And I found my way to your wonderful event through Veronica Antipolo, who's an amazing storyteller and comedian. And she approached me about Stories We Don't Tell, and the rest is happening right now.
you lead a very creative life, and yeah, there's lots of different things that you do. And how would you say in terms of our event, and you're coming and you're telling this story, where do you think this working through all your creative endeavors and all the different things that you do and all the talent that you put into all of this, where do you feel the storytelling element of it, then showing up at our event and you're telling sort of a personal story, where did that kind of interest, and was it a part of everything else that you were doing maybe and it led to this, but maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
You know, actually that story that I told at your event, that's a bit of a weird one. There's only one other time where I shared a personal kind of autobiographical story at True Stories Told Live in Toronto. And, you know, it was pretty personal, but the one that I shared at your event, it was an unusual creative experience because I think it was something so personal. So, you know, as your listeners will hear, it's about a second trimester loss. And I had, you know, a lot of writing about it, both just straight up kind of journal type writing, but also, you know, because there's this, you know, existing context of this writing and arts practice, you know, I had also been doing some fictionalizing and also had been sort of writing about it in different ways. And so there was some, there were some bits, some existing writing bits that I was able to kind of harness when it came to the decision to share that story. And the decision to share that story, was elicited by Veronica's workshopping process. So I said to her, you know, she's like, okay, I'm booking you for this event. You're going to be one of my London storytellers. And she checked in. And I was like, to be honest, like, you can count on me. Like, I will have the story. I will show up with the thing, but I am having a bit of a hard time. She's like, you want some prompts? Cut to us having a Zoom call where she's taking me through her process. And I went into it thinking that I was going to write about one thing. Mm-hmm. And then she said to me, well, maybe that's it. But regardless, at the end of this process, you are going to know what your story is. And she was absolutely right, because all of the themes that emerge were about baby journey, were about loss, were about control, you know, surrounding that theme. And so that is what set me on the journey toward creating that story. I think the timing also influenced it, because it was Mother's Day weekend was when that event was. And the story I end up telling is set on Mother's Day weekend the previous year, which turned out to be this shit show of emotional activation for me. and kind of like a, you know, tragic comic story that I'm really proud of. I'm, you know, in the end, but it's weird to look back on, that's for sure. I still kind of can't believe that I shared that, to be honest with you. So it is kind of a standout as far as my storytelling work goes. If that answers your question.
No, it totally does. And I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that, because what I remember when you came to our first workshop was you just had this like unbelievably good piece that just didn't have an ending. I remember you were like, I know where it's going, but here's what I have right now. And it was so fully fleshed out that it, you know, it makes sense that you had sort of worked with Veronica a little bit beforehand, because yeah, it felt so clear as to what you were going for. And so even though you were like, and then we just sort of riffed off the end, you were like, here's roughly where it's going. We were like, oh wow, this is going to be incredible. And it really was. I'm wondering if one thing that we think about a lot is the delineation between storytelling and therapy, especially because, you know, we are the stories that don't tell. We encourage stories that are hard and are not often found on other stages. And so that means we get stories that are occasionally, like yours, heart-wrenching.
Right.
But that's always a bit of there's always a bit of a concern when those stories are being shared, that you always have to sort of try to make sure the storyteller is going to be okay, the audience is going to be okay, and that the storyteller has, you know, processed it enough that what they're going to provide isn't a therapy session, but is in fact a story that is, you know, of their life, and that they feel good about it, you know, that they feel good about their ability to work through it. And so I'm curious how, given the unbelievable, grief that is at the core of your story, how you managed to work through that and also create what was so clearly a very functioning story. Like, the beats of it were there, the whole thing came together, like closes that away that is like perfect for the whole thing. And so how did you sort of ride that wave and create this sort of piece? And how did you think about it as you were writing it?
Well, I certainly think that the support and encouragement throughout, including the workshop with you guys, was very helpful, because I went into that kind of unsure, like, is this too much? Is this a therapy session, or is this a story that can be appreciated as a work of art? And so, you know, you guys were very, I think, instrumental and Veronica as well, in giving me the confidence to kind of bring it home. You know, that's a great question. And I think I just was able to trust my instincts about that, because I am a very private person. And so, you know, I have a pretty honed instinct with respect to what I am comfortable and not comfortable sharing. You know, how is future me going to feel having shared something so personal with a room full of strangers? You know, I feel like that instinct is pretty honed. And through some of the experience I've had, you know, very fortunately, of confiding in people at that more therapeutic and private interpersonal level about, you know, the grief of that experience. I feel like I kind of know where that kind of processing belongs versus where I'm going to present this as a work of art belongs. And so I think I was able to look at it not just through my own processing lens, but, you know, imagining it from the audience member's perspective, you know, and thinking chances are we're both going to feel vulnerable and tender at the same time, and therefore both going to want a bit of relief at the same time. Also, even in my own private life, like throughout this whole unstraightforward baby journey, I really do have this like inner therapist and inner comedian slash writer who are working side by side. And that comedian is honestly like just ready to poke through in the least appropriate moment, like objectively appropriate moment. Like for me, it's fine because I'm the one experiencing it. And it's like, ha ha ha, you know, da, 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 da. And so I just think that that desire to kind of find the coexistence of grief and just that comedy that comes with coping without, you know, comedy being a distraction, without it sort of being, you know, an escape rather than a release valve. I just think that that's so central to my writing as it is, that that came into play too in the creation of that really personal story.
So you're a very seasoned performer, a musician, all kinds of things, you know, and I was interested to hear at the beginning how you were talking about in terms of personal stories. Like, I'm sure there's ways, whether it's songs, whether it's fiction and all of this, you found ways to express yourself in those kind of places. But I'm so interested to hear how you felt. Like, so if you take us back to the house where the event is, during the event, I record all the stories, and when it's very packed, I'm often on the sort of sitting right next to where the storyteller is. And it's an interesting place to be because I can feel what's happening with the storyteller, but I can also feel what's happening with the audience. And in your story is like one of those really incredible stories that where people were really laughing because I think they needed that release, and you knew that they needed that release, that, like you said, with that inner sort of comedian. But then other times you could hear a pin drop, and people were doing that leaning in thing and really, really paying attention. But for you, what did you feel being in that room, in that space, sharing the story that you were sharing? How did that sort of feel for you as you were going through those 10 minutes?
Yeah, I felt very safe. Yeah, and I felt very listened to and attended to. Veronica had primed me for a very, she's like, this is an amazing space. This is a love-in. People are with you. People want to be with you. And so I had that expectation going in. I had very high expectations going in. But then, of course, you know, and that was borne out by then meeting the two of you. And that was just a very supportive and encouraging space. And so I was certainly like not surprised that when I got there, I really had that feeling that the audience and I were together. You know, we were, although it was like a memorized story, of course, it did sort of, I felt like I was just sharing it almost like spontaneously or organically. And I really just had the sense that they were with me. And it was very triumphant and satisfying to pull it off, because not only was their reaction just so generous and so, just so moving, you know, how they got the tenderness, they got the laughs, you know, they got it. But then in the conversations afterward, you know, some people were just really supportive. And then, you know, some people were sharing their own stories, not, you know, direct and indirect experience with a similar theme. And so that was really meaningful too.
You're working on a novel. You've written songs before. how would you compare and contrast sort of the work that is some of the other creative efforts you've done and in storytelling specifically?
This is, if there's kind of an infuriating difference that I'm noticing, and that is, I find that something that I'm writing with the intention of live storytelling, I find it really is so different on the page, you know, because part of me is thinking, you know, oh, it'd be nice to, you know, try to get some more stuff out there for publication, you know. And then I look at this stuff on the page, the stuff that is specifically being crafted for live storytelling. And to me, it just doesn't work. You know, it's something that's really meant to be live. It's something that only plays live, something that, you know, is going to land in that perfect pocket when you're telling it, is just not reaching out the page at you. And so that's kind of an infuriating difference, because, I do have that instinct to want to maybe compile things in a written form. And maybe I'm wrong, right? Maybe it's, I just need to open these things up in a textual form to a reader and see how they play. But in general, I find that, yeah, there's just this this way that I write out loud that's just really different from writing on the page. And especially when I'm trying to figure out like comedy, that it's really infuriating. Like, I wish I could be as funny on the page as I think I am in real life. Not to say that I'm hilarious in real life. I'm talking relatively speaking, you know? And so I think that, hopefully that's something I just build up or learn to do a little better with experience. But right now it's just a bit of a soap bubble that my fingers are slipping on.
Well, maybe you can, so I asked about how you felt in the room when it was happening. A few months have now gone by, and I'm curious, maybe, and this might lead into another question, or this might be a two-parter question, that how do you feel, how do you look back at this experience now, you know, going through it, and how do you sort of think about it? And are there things that maybe you're going to take in to some of these other, creative endeavors that you have, and you can then maybe tell us about some of these things that you have coming up or that you're working on?
Yeah, I felt a bit like leading up to the event, it made perfect sense that this was the story I was doing for this event at this time. And I think I mentioned this to both of you at the time. I was actually really grateful for the opportunity to do the story at that time, because it was a difficult time of year. And focusing on that story, I think, went a long way to helping me get through it with just a better sense of control, you know? Because it's just a time of year where one can easily unravel. And unraveling's fine, but sometimes you just want to be in control for 5 minutes, you know what I mean? But at, like, looking back, I was saying to a friend in anticipation of our chat tonight, like, sometimes I look back and just feel a bit like thin-skinned about it, you know, like thin-skinned in the breeze about it. Like, oh my gosh, I kind of can't believe that I shared that. And now I have to talk about it. Like, how do I feel about talking about it after the fact? Like, ooh, you know, there was just a bit of a nervous or a tender feeling looking back. That said, I totally don't regret it. And I think that using more of my personal experience in my writing is actually a sign of me maybe maturing as a writer and as an artist. And I don't know if there's a connection to the event, but I've had a couple of like really obvious breakthroughs with my novel recently where, you know, I was challenged to do some like, okay, character development. This character, you know, is just needs more depth. And the obvious answer was just like pulling things from myself that I wouldn't like wear a billboard advertising these things about myself, but like incorporating them into a fictional character is just like so obvious. And yet it was such a revelation, you know, it's like, oh, you don't need to go to the ends of the earth for the answer to this character development question. Like, you have the answer, you are the answer, you know, just mine it, just go there. And use it, right? So I think that I will continue to, to take on that challenge of maybe doing that more autobiographical storytelling, especially, I mean, I have kind of a stockpile of really hilarious notes about my amazing legendary mother that like need an audience. Some like this, it has to be, it's got to be something. So yeah, there's certainly a stockpile there for more storytelling in this vein, I think. Yeah.
Well, that's very exciting to hear. We'd love to have you back.
Oh, I would love to come back. You just give me a deadline. Just give me the date. Oh my God, I love a deadline. Invite me back in a time-related, specific, measurable way.
Our second show this year will be either November 16th or 23rd. Exact date, but I'll give you that deadline.
Email me.
Okay, we'll do. So we've teased, I think, our audience for long enough. I think it is time to go to this story of yours. So for folks who are listening to the podcast, thank you so much, Misha, for joining us. And this story was told May 2024. Take it away.
A sad woman with a laptop and a plan walks into a cafe. That was me this time last year, the Saturday before Mother's Day Sunday. I went to Variety Cafe in my hometown of London with the following plan. Get a coffee, work on some writing, try to distract myself from how 5 months prior to that sunny May afternoon, I was losing my son in the second trimester. I walk in, look around, instantly realize this is a terrible idea. I have somehow forgotten that Variety Cafe is one of these bustling neighborhood hubs that, far from being a distraction from, you know, motherhood, is Mother's Day ground zero. It's like every family in a 10-block radius is at this cafe. Grandmas, grandpas, moms, dads, kids, toddlers, brand new babies being held and passed around. And it's a beautiful community picture that for me is a surprise emotional attack. Totally understandable, deeply shameful, right? How the grieving heart is disturbed by other people's happiness. I almost leave, but then leaning into the skill of holding back tears, I think it would be a real accomplishment if I could make it through today without crying. It would mean that I'm getting better, where getting better specifically refers to having control over how I feel. Delusional challenge accepted. I decide to stay, okay? I go to the counter, I order a coffee from the sweetest barista ever. And as I'm about to pay, she gestures to a plate of adorable white sugar cookies decorated in pink and purple royal icing. And she tells me, so for Mother's Day, we're like doing a free cookie and a discount. So like, are you, are you here because you're celebrating? Like, you know, are you? And I realize, oh, she's asking me if I'm a mom. And either because she hasn't quite formulated the question or because I'm looking at her with the facial expression equivalent of an icy road warning sign, she can't quite get it out. And so I stop her and I say, I am no one for whom a Mother's Day discount applies. Just like that, stone cold, like the Clint fucking Eastwood of perinatal loss. And this poor girl, she's like, oh, yeah, totally. And like, maybe we should just like have a sign so that we don't have to, deal with devastated, aspiring mothers whose losses turn them into a total cunt. Yeah, get a sign. Get a sign. So then, total cunt sits down, that's me, at one of the loner bar stools on the periphery of all the joy. Perfect. Get out my laptop, open the latest draft of my novel in progress. But instead of diving in and working on it like I planned, I start thinking about how I've been trying to write this book for years and years. and have been trying to have a baby for years and years. And how these are both efforts with creation that I am failing at. Just like that, this thought leaks in like an oil spill and overwhelms me. Maybe I'm not meant to create. Maybe there's something about me that's inhospitable to life itself. Maybe I'm dangerous. And it's not true what this voice is telling me. But at this stage, I've become acquainted with a cast of internal characters who surface in particular moments of distress, right? So there's like the counselor character who's all about processing your mindfulness. When was the last time you had a sandwich? Right, there's the comedian who's like, we should totally write like a hilarious skit about shitty embryos. Don't get me started on her, okay? And then there's this not meant to be character who is a ruthless asshole, but she's trying to help. Like a tough love mom is trying to help by being harder on you than the world could ever be, right? She can't solve the sting of existence, but she can make it unsurprising. By now, inner ruthless asshole is fully at the helm of my brain, but I still haven't caved. I am still dry-eyed, so I decide, quit while I'm ahead, pack my things, but then as I turn to leave, I see that exiting the coffee shop is going to be like getting to the end of an epic video game level. Like battle bosses everywhere. My friend and his three daughters. You guys have another baby on the way? Oh my God, that's amazing. My coworker and her husband. You got pregnant by accident? Oh my God, that's amazing. Cafe owner visiting with her newborn. 8 pounds, 10 ounces. Oh my God, that's amazing. And my support is real. It's genuine, but the inescapable fact between us is that you have a baby and my baby died. And so with each encounter, I take a hit. It's okay, I'm still in the game, but by the time I get through this fucking level, my health bar will have been drained by the combination of your fulfillment and my loss. Finally, I leave the goddamn cafe, only to unknowingly enter the final act of my Mother's Day weekend tragic comedy. A couple friends of mine, they own a bookshop. They're having an outdoor pop-up, first of the season, with their new baby girl, who I zoom in on right away. She's with her dad. He's cradling her on his lap while obviously struggling with his point of sale system. And before I can decide whether to say hello or just get the hell out of there, he calls to me and says, hey, Misha, can you hold this baby? Of course I'd be honored, I say, like a masochistic moron. But then, as I'm holding her, for just a few seconds, I feel unexpectedly serene. Like we're looking at each other and smiling at each other. And as I focus on the fit of her little bundle of a body in my arms, I think, and it's a gift of a thought, my embrace is a safe place. And it's a surprisingly sweet moment until people start thinking I'm her mom. Oh, she's beautiful. How old is she? How's she sleeping? How are you sleeping? Like all of a sudden it's a mini swarm of this particular kind of female stranger who like hears a baby crying from three blocks away and shouts from her porch, she's hungry. Like, you know, every new baby is her business. And at first I'm doing a really good job fending off these projections of motherhood with a polite but distancing professional demeanor. No, no, I'm not the mother. I'm merely holding the baby while her father reboots his POS. No. I'm not the mother. No, I'm not the mother. No, I'm not the mother. I'm not a mother. I'm not a mother. Not a mother. Not a mother. I'm not a mother. And as I'm handing her to her mom, this guy says to me out of nowhere, "But you want to be, eh? I can tell you want to be a mom." I just look at him, stunned. And he smiles and keeps saying it again and again, like it's the kindest observation in the world. I can tell you want to be a mom. On the verge of being pissed, the writer in me has her moment. As I cast this man in a supporting role. A secret agent of the cosmic It's Okay to Cry police, whose purpose in this story is to trigger a stranger, that's me, who now, at last, is crying. Walking home, one step at a time, surrendering to the painful and miraculous way that Mother's Day will always include me. Thank you.
We want to thank the storytellers for sharing these intimate pieces of their lives, the event hosts who welcome us into their homes, and the audiences who come to our shows and listen to this podcast. Music was composed by Arlene Pakulin. And for more information on the podcast, the book, event, or to join our mailing list, please visit storieswedonttell.org.